Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win. Like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hello, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to the United Stands. I'm Mark Goldbridge, and this is your latest Manchester United news and transfer news as United miss out on Elliot Anderson and go full ahead on talks with Carlos Baleba. Of course, that's an April Fool's. That's the only April Fool's. I don't think April Fool's even works anymore with the internet. I was saying this in our group chat this morning. Somebody said that Bruno was out for a year. And I went, but I know it's April Fool's. And when I was growing up, April Fool's used to be brilliant. Like you really could catch people out. But with the internet now, you just can't do it. Having said that, us missing out on Elliot Anderson and going for Baleba, maybe not an April Fool's. It could be just a very, very, you know, unlucky prediction. We'll have to wait and see. But what we are going to be talking about this morning is big updates around João Gomes, Adam Wharton, a little bit about Tonali I want to talk about at the start of the show. Also, Martinez is back from injury. How do you think Mainoo and Anderson did together last night for England? Because I thought they did crap. As a pair, I thought it was crap. I thought Anderson did well, but I think as a pair, that would terrify me next season. I don't know how anybody can turn it into a positive. I mean, it was a really crap performance from England, and I thought Mainoo and Anderson didn't work. Also, more PR spin coming out about Michael Carrick. Apparently, we're playing great football, according to an article in The Athletic today. I'll dismantle that, in my opinion. And also, Lewis Skelly is desperate to join Manchester United. Should he be joining Manchester United? We have an active poll at the moment where 52% of you are saying no, and 48% of you are saying yes. We'll get involved in that. But look, we're going to start off very, very quickly. It's all topical. It's a news show. Make sure you smash a like, get your comments in, subscribe. First of all, I want to start off just to say commiserations to Dorgu. I think Dorgu was playing so well for us when he got injured in January. You know, he will always be the player I associate most with them brilliant games against Arsenal and Man City. The only two good games I think we've had under Carrick, and Dorgu played in those. Obviously, he's Danish. He didn't play in the qualifiers. I really hope they were going to get there because he's had a bit of a crap end to the season. So it would be nice for him to go to the World Cup. They didn't make it. So unlucky on Dorgu. But there is a little bit of a turn around the transfers. There's an interesting story coming out of João Gomes being of interest to Manchester United. Could he be that second midfielder? We want to talk about that. But Tonali losing on penalties with Italy last night to Bosnia means that Tonali is now in the Baleba category where there is no World Cup distraction. So what I'm saying is that whoever is going for Tonali this summer, that obviously doesn't help Tonali, but it helps Newcastle, it helps the player, and it helps the buyer. Because effectively, you can start now. And Newcastle, look, there was something that came out from Newcastle's CEO yesterday. I think I mentioned it on the evening show about they don't want another Isak situation. They want to be in control of who's going. And they want to, basically what Newcastle are saying is they want to know who's going very quickly, move them on very quickly, and then spend that money very quickly instead of spending it desperately at the end of the window when Isak's on strike. So I think Newcastle will have a very mature approach to the transfer window because they're not going to be in the Champions League. They do need a little bit of a rebuild. They also need to accept that they've got to sell to buy. That's just the way they are with the financial fair play. So I think from Newcastle's point of view, Tonali not being in the World Cup, if he's the player they're going to move on, which I think he will be, that means they can get that deal working in June. From Man United's point of view, one of the big fears I've always had is that Baleba is not at the World Cup. And therefore, United can just negotiate with Brighton for the whole of June, say, and make out like it's a good thing. But we could do that with Newcastle now. If Tonali had gone to the World Cup, I think you sort of like, I'm focused on the World Cup. I'll speak when I get back from the World Cup. And we're probably going to see that with a few players. But if he's not going to the World Cup, I think players who aren't at the World Cup want to be not centre of attention, but they want to get they're back for pre-season. If you look at United, Sesko not going to the World Cup, so he'll go and have a holiday in June and he'll be raring to go at the start of July. There's a couple of other players like that. Mason Mount, if he's even fit. Luke Shaw. So there are players that who don't go to the World Cup who are ready. You know, they want to get their season ready. They want to get a head start. And Tonali will be one of those. So I think if Tonali's leaving Newcastle, June will be key. Now, I mean, look, I'm still of the opinion yesterday that United will not go for Tonali. But some people seem to think that that could still happen if we don't get Anderson. What I'm saying is, to those people who believe we could still go for Tonali, him not being in the World Cup is obviously a personal issue. But for anybody that wants us to sign Tonali, I think that just became easier because he's not in the World Cup and you can work on that. Remember, Elliot Anderson might wait till after the World Cup and that becomes problematic. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. We will know which midfielders the board will get when they start pushing the PR for those players to the max. This board only knows how to do PR, says Max Loves Cookies, with our first super chat of the morning. Good morning, Max. Hope you're doing very well. What's the João Gomes story, Mark? Well, the João Gomes story is this, and you'll notice that we've got Adam Wharton on the thumbnail this morning. Now, this is just a theory I'm going to throw out. This is where I think we're at the moment in relation to the midfields. We are obviously going to go for Elliot Anderson, and we know that Elliot Anderson is a target for Manchester City. And if he decides that he wants to go to Manchester City, I think, like Semenyo, Man United will drop out very quickly and look elsewhere. That could happen. We'll talk about Elliot Anderson and Maynou in a couple of minutes. So let's assume Anderson doesn't come to Manchester United. I don't think we are in for Tonali. I personally think, when you leak twice that you're worried about his gambling habit, I think you're sort of closing the door on that. I could be wrong. I also don't think they want to pay the money. I think the package for Tonali is putting Man United off. And one thing people aren't really discussing about United is there is clearly a budget that we are working to here. So we have to be wary of the fact that United, just because they're in the Champions League, we're not Man City, we're not Liverpool, we're not Arsenal, we're not going to spend £500 million. This club is still a Glazer football club. We will be limited. And if you want an example of Man United's limitations in the transfer market this summer, you can look at previous ones where we don't buy midfielders, we don't buy positions that we need. But look at right back. There are no conversations about a right back at all. Now, if we were Man City under Pep, do you think he'd look at the right back situation, know it's a problem and go, let's leave it? Do you think Arteta at Arsenal sits there and goes, right back's a problem, let's just leave it because we haven't got the money? Man United aren't doing anything with right back. They might not do anything with striker. These are two positions that may not be priority, but if you want to win a league title and you want to be in the Champions League every year, you need a bloody good right back and you need a decent backup striker. United aren't even looking at those. We're not buying a right back in the summer at all. We are going Dalot, Mazraoui next season. I like Mazraoui, but he's got limitations. Dalot is a bench player. We're playing in the Champions League and the Premier League next year and we're going with Dalot and Mazraoui. There's no rumours about right back. We're not even looking at right backs. We might not even buy a left back. So there's your limitations on transfers. We clearly have a budget because we're not even talking about positions that big clubs would still go and solve. I mean, look, Arsenal last year went and bought bloody backups for most positions. So there will be a limitation on what we can spend. We're not going to get Tonali and Anderson. And I think if we don't get Anderson, and I don't believe we're going to get Tonali, I've got a feeling Adam Wharton is starting to move towards the number one slot. I don't have any information about that. I just think that Anderson and Man City, that's, you know, at best it's 50-50. Tonali, I don't think we're going for. And then who's your plan A midfielder? And I think Wharton is starting to head into that position. The second midfielder, though, this is what we're going to talk about, João Gomes. So Manchester United, in relation to João Gomes, the situation with him this morning is that Man United have a long-standing interest in João Gomes, and he's someone they're going to consider depending on how other midfield targets work out. United want two centre midfielders this summer, which makes the likelihood of a transfer like Gomes much larger, and also Wolves are likely to be relegated, so his price may be lower than you'd expect for a player of his quality. Well, I can tell you that João Gomes's price is predicted to be lower than £35 million. And he's had a good season. He's 25. And I think as a second midfield option, Man United are seriously looking at João Gomes. And I would expect those rumours, might have heard something, to start growing over the next few days. Now, remember I said this about Antony a week before it happened in early June, whenever that summer was, and the Liam Delap story. I'm just saying, João Gomes, expect that to start to grow, but also expect a bit of competition, because there actually is competition for João Gomes, and it's not just the likes of an Everton or a Crystal Palace. There are some bigger clubs looking at João Gomes and going, he has a trajectory in him, he has a potential in him to go into a bigger club and actually do really well. There's a lot of clubs, I've heard Liverpool, who like the profile of João Gomes, because at that price, it's worth the punt. And the punt is, yes, Wolves are getting relegated, but the numbers he puts in and the performances he's put in a poor Wolves side, if you put him in a decent side, those performances could go up another level. And for 35 million, Wolves can't ask for any more. For 35 million or less, it's almost a bit of a no-brainer for some teams. So United are definitely looking at João Gomes. The concern is, well, there's two concerns. The concern is, I think Baleba is United's second midfielder. I think we all know United and Wilcox are lining up Baleba as the second midfielder. I think if they could get their way, they'd go Anderson and Baleba. I think that's where they're heading. Baleba will probably cost north of £60 million, so almost double João Gomes, and you don't get double the player. So I would still say Baleba as the second midfielder might well be the guy. But for me, I would say João Gomes absolutely fine for the reasons we've just spoken about there. I'd be more comfortable if he was the third midfielder. I still think there is a scenario where United need to go Anderson, Wharton, Baleba. I don't think Wharton and Gomes and that's it is good enough. I don't even think Anderson and Gomes and that's it is good enough. I certainly don't think Anderson and Baleba is good enough. I think United need three midfielders. And I don't mind João Gomes, but I don't know that he should be the second midfielder. I'd take him over Baleba every bloody day of the week. But I feel like United's third midfielder should be a Scott from Bournemouth or a Gomes from Wolves, or an Ampadu from Leeds, or a Tyler Adams from Bournemouth. I feel that that's the profile of the third midfielder, but there's a danger it slips into being the second midfielder. And that's a price thing. That's a price thing, isn't it? You know, I look at the football club in the way I want us to be successful and challenge the top clubs. We've only got Mainoo in the midfield, Anderson, Wharton, Gomes. You've got four midfielders. Let's go. I think United look at it from a Excel spreadsheet and go, we can't afford three midfielders, let's get Anderson and Gomes and call it a day. And I don't think that's going to be enough. I really don't. I think when you look at Casemiro leaving this season, Ugarte, if we keep Ugarte, let's call it what it is. If we keep Ugarte, it's a number in a squad. It's like right back. Let's not bother with right back because we've got Dalot and Mazraoui. If we keep Ugarte, it's like, let's keep Ugarte and then we don't have to buy a third midfielder. And that's never going to work. Everybody's written Ugarte off. I think Ugarte's written himself off. So if we keep Ugarte just so we can only buy two midfielders and then we say we've got Mainoo, two new midfielders and Ugarte, all right, you've got four midfielders, which is what you need, but one of them's Ugarte. If Ugarte and Casemiro have gone, you've got Mainoo, two new midfielders. That's three midfielders for two slots. Oh, but we can use a kid. A kid should never be part of the roster. They should be extra. So I think we need three midfielders, but I don't hear enough that we're going for three midfielders. I do like João Gomes, and I agree with James Cave in his super chat. João Gomes is the right character, but I worry Baleba is already lined up. Could Baleba have been more of an Amrim target because of his physicality? No, Baleba was definitely Wilcox, because when Amrim got sacked, Baleba, the club have still continued to leak the same stuff about Baleba, that they don't care about his performances this season. They still want him. So that is definitely, I mean, look, Amrim was obviously on board with it, but it was definitely led by the Ineos group, whoever that is.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. And when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Red says, what about Collier? I think with Collier, he gets a lot of injuries. And what has he actually done on loan? I mean, we're Manchester United, mate. I think, what about this? What about that? We need to go and get good players, I think. Get me from Poundland, says JT Goated. And Patrick Lynch says, all the talk about pushing for top targets feels like incredible spin. When they end up elsewhere and we end up with third and fourth picks, people will say, well, we got something. What? That's really worrying, my opinion. Well, let me just talk about the midfield, because I do want to just talk about, I don't know whether anybody watched the England game last night. If you were watching my stream, you'll know I didn't get to watch much of the second half because of technical issues. I just gave up in the end. But I did watch the first half. We got a glimpse of Mainoo and Anderson together, which some people were quite excited about, myself included, because hypothetically that could be Man United's midfield next season. I actually thought Mainoo was quite tidy on the ball, and I think Anderson is all action, but looking at them as a pair, you know, and Japan's not the best team in the world. I like Japan's midfield, and their goal was fantastic, and they're so tidy on the ball. But Mainoo and Anderson, I like Mainoo and I like Anderson, but Mainoo and Anderson as a midfield too, in a Man United midfield. And all right, if they played really well last night, I'd still say the same. I don't think they played badly. I don't think they played well. That, if that's Man United's plan, can we start wearing blue and just play at home, our home games at Stamford Bridge when Chelsea are away? I mean, I don't get the concept of putting Mainoo and Anderson together in a midfield next season. And if I was Bruno Fernandes, I'd be saying I'm off to Saudi. Because that's nothing more than another season of trust me, bro, project. We're not meant to be doing a project next year. We're meant to be doing let's stay in the Champions League and let's start moving up the league a little bit and play better football. We can't go for a project midfield next year. And it feels like I was watching Mainoo and Anderson and I was like, there might be some potential here, but this is a project. They're not ready to go. They're both inexperienced. And that's our midfield next year. And I'm like, this ain't going to work. I don't think they complement each other that well anyway, because Anderson needs to go forward. Mainoo needs to go forward. And I don't think either of them really wants to sit. And as we saw with the Japan goal and a couple of times, and we've seen it at United, the reason you need a Casemiro next to Mainoo is that people run off Mainoo and he's not very quick. He's not really defensively that good. Mainoo is the sort of player that you could drop into, and people are going to laugh, you could drop Mainoo into a Barcelona midfield and he'd probably be decent at just keeping the ball and keep it rotating. I think Mainoo works in a possession team where you just want to keep possession and, you know, have high possession. Ironically, that's not United. But you couldn't put Mainoo with Anderson at the moment because you're going to make Anderson sit, and most of his game is not about sitting, and Mainoo's game's not about sitting. So they don't complement each other very well at all. They might learn to complement each other, but I don't like that word learn. I don't like the word learn. We can't be a project every year. And this is not going to keep people like Bruno Fernandes at the club. And why keep Harry Maguire for another year if we're doing another bloody project? Like, there are some people in that team that need to, you know, be doing what we're doing next season, which is actually achieving what we can achieve. So, I'll be blunt. Garner was better than Mainoo across both games. In the first half against whoever they played last Friday, Uruguay, Garner was better. And when Garner came on yesterday, he was better. That doesn't mean Mainoo's bad, but I think Garner looked the best midfielder for England across both games. I don't know what that means. It doesn't mean sign Garner. It's international football. But what worried me is that I like Anderson, I like Mainoo, but if that's our idea for next season, it's fucking stupid. You can see the problem straight away. It's going to be learner drivers trying to work together in a Premier League midfield and in a Champions League midfield where we need results from the start. And we can't be sat there next season after five or six games going, this might work in a few months. Carrick will be gone. Carrick can't afford that either. If they think they can give Carrick the job and go with an inexperienced midfield, and everyone's going to sit there and go, don't worry, it's a project. No, they have not read the room at all. As Mike Keegan was saying with the interim, you appoint an interim without interviewing other people. The minute you give him a permanent job, the heat is on. And if you give him project players and results don't go our way, I'm telling you now, give Carrick the job, don't give him the right midfield, a few bad results, and by October, people will be saying Carrick out. 100%. You know, I mean, I think people might even be saying Carrick out in August if we lose a couple of games. So we've got to get experience into that midfield is my message. Obviously, they're ignoring Bruno Guimarães now. They're ignoring the Tonali story, potentially. I don't know where this experience is coming from, but I think last night was a very big, big focus on the fact that we can't have a midfield next year of a 20-year-old and a 22-year-old or 23-year-old. That is, you know, this is Manchester United's midfield. And Michael Carrick should be putting his hand up and saying, hold on a minute, I didn't come into Man United's midfield at 20 and play with another 22-year-old, did I? You brought me into this midfield and you stuck me with Paul Scholes and Owen Hargreaves, you know, internationals. So why the fuck are we at our lowest point trying to build a team with kids in the midfield? Like, we need... You can't... And all right, Casemiro's losing his legs, but he's still one of the most experienced midfielders in world football in the last decade. You can't just chuck a couple of kids in the midfield and tell me we're going to be okay. So if United aren't, I mean, I don't know who the experience is though. If it's not Bruno Guimarães and it's not Tonali, where is this experienced midfielder coming from? And it seems to me we're following this Chelsea model again of inexperience. Everything we do seems to be very similar to Chelsea. Let's just buy players under 24. Let's get an inexperienced coach in. I mean, look, I mean, this is not the Chelsea stand, but what makes me laugh about following this model of inexperience is that it's very business driven. It's sort of like, well, if we buy cheap, they retain their value for longer, and there may be a resale value, and we can hide behind project. But you look at Chelsea under Todd Boehly, and you look at Chelsea under Abramovich. Now, Todd Boehly spent a lot of money, but it's all been spent on potential. So Cole Palmer, very, very good player, potential. Fofana, £80 million, potential. Badiashile, potential. Caicedo, potential. Garnacho, potential. There's, you know, Delap, potential. Everything is potential. And their managers over the last few years, Potter, potential. The bad Lampard, potential. Maresca, potential, really, from Leicester. Rod Rossini, the definition of potential. And they're not successful. Don't talk to me about Club World Cups. They're not successful, right? You look at Chelsea under Abramovich, consistently winning Premier Leagues. They won the Champions League. They won FA Cups. Look at their managers. Sarri, Conte, Mourinho, Ancelotti, Tuchel. I'm probably going to miss somebody as well. Best in class managers. And they won things. Now look at them. Inexperienced. They're nowhere near it. And United have looked at it and gone, it could be more expensive to go best in class, so let's go inexperienced because it's never fucking worked anywhere. And that, you know, Chelsea is such a good example. Their model that we seem to be interested in doesn't fucking work. They're nowhere near winning titles because they're going for inexperienced people all the time. You know, if Chelsea got Luis Enrique in, Luis Enrique at Chelsea is exactly what Chelsea were doing under Abramovich, but they're not doing it. They're going for an experience and we're bloody copying them. It's mad. I don't get it. So I do think in relation to the midfield, I'm a little bit concerned. Well, I'm a lot concerned about, yeah, we might buy a couple of players who are 22 who are very good, but it's not just about being good. Wharton's going from Palace to Man United. Anderson's going from Forest to Man United. Belabor's going from Brighton to Manchester United. You can't just put a Man United shirt on and be, hey, I'm Roy Keane. Tonight, Matthew, I'm going to be prime Paul Scholes. You know, we know what this job's about. And to not go with experience, I think, is scary. But this is when you've got an inexperienced CEO and an inexperienced director of football, you end up with inexperienced choices. And we've seen it time and time again. And the only thing that's worked in the last 2 years is Cunha and Mbeumo as genuine Premier League proven players. And even they've wobbled. You know, I like Cunha and Mbeumo and they have been good, but has Mbeumo played well for the last 6 weeks? No. Has Cunha had a bit of a wobble? Yes. So even experienced players at Man United will have times of struggle. Going for inexperienced players, bloody hell. I mean, look, Le Mans has been fantastic, but that's a little bit different because we have done that with a goalkeeper before and his name was David De Gea. And also, goalkeeper's not the same as an outfield player, is it? It's not the same as playing in the midfield. And Le Mans has been fantastic. Let me talk to you just very quickly. We may as well bring this in. So another story this morning about Lewis Skelly being very interested in joining Manchester United. Man United are apparently scouting him. Arsenal willing to sell him. There's not been any mention of price. I've put a poll in this morning. Would you sign Lewis Skelly? 51% of you are saying no. 49% of you are saying yes. He'll be 20 in September. Obviously, he burst onto the scene with Arsenal a couple of years ago. Lots of hype, lots of excitement. Looked like he was going to be a left back. Then he played in the midfield. Then he doesn't play at all. Obviously, he scored a goal and did the Haaland celebration. People said his ego was out of control. Arsenal clearly looking to sell him. Man United apparently looking to buy him. For me, it's a no. It's really simple. It's a no. And that United will probably do it because it fits the profile of a player that is young, that's got future value, that might turn into a good player. I mean, it's, but I've just answered my own question. Every part of those reasons is a no from me. Because why do I want potential when I've already got Amas and Leon? Why do I need to buy another potential left back? Also, Arsenal are going to want north of 40 million, I think, which is ridiculous. He's also been a bit of a flop at Arsenal for the last year. Why would I want an Arsenal reject, effectively? And why would I want to put money in the pocket of Arsenal? So these are all reasons where I would go, there's a guy at Bournemouth who will get for the same price, who's ready to go, had an amazing debut season in the Premier League, and his name's Truffert. Why would I go for another prospect who, again, I mean, we've got Dorgu as well. Why would I go for another prospect left back that I've got to wait and see if they can settle and do well? I don't know why we're doing these types of. I don't know why we're linked to these sort of deals. Obviously, I don't know whether we're going to do it, but I just don't get it. You've got Dorgu, Amas, Leon. Why would I give Arsenal good money? He hasn't done that well at Arsenal for the last year. Is clearly a reject at Arsenal, whether you want to call it that or not. And why do I want a player that may or may not be a good player in the next few years? I mean, it's like the midfield. I don't want Luke Shaw at left back, but I don't want another bloody prospect. There are certain positions in that team where we've got to stop obsessing about future value and realise you're going to sack whoever your next manager is if you load him up with problems. Amorim was trying to build something and he lost his job because they didn't give him the right players in the right positions. They gave him too many prospects and they left a hole in the midfield. And he got the sack, rightly or wrongly, whatever you want to call it. The next manager could be Michael Carrick, could be an experienced coach. They ain't going to last 5 minutes if you load them up with projects. Because United is about results and it's about the now. And we haven't been decent for 12 years. And we need to start. We're going to be in the Champions League. We've got to stay there. It's not excusable to be in the Champions League next year and then go, well, we have got a load of prospects. So if it doesn't go well, we are building for the future. You've got to build for the now. Potential signings only retain or gain value if they reach their projected levels, says Emily. How many of those signings have come off for Chelsea and how many have flopped? How many would they make a profit on, says Emily Derry. Well, I call it the João Pedro effect, Emily. I think João Pedro is an interesting player at Chelsea. United never really looked at him. Is he a striker? Is he a number 10? Is he consistent? Is he top class? João Pedro is a really interesting player because I think if you put João Pedro in a Man City side, he probably succeeds and he probably scores lots of goals. But you put him in a Chelsea side, it's debatable whether he's decent. Every now and again he gets a goal and then they have three or four games where he does nothing. But that's because he's surrounded with inexperience. The class of 92 would probably not have been as good as they are if they didn't have the likes of Roy Keane, Eric Cantona, Peter Schmeichel, Steve Bruce, Gary Pallister, Paul Ince, all these players around them, Mark Hughes, all these players around them to nurture them. If you put them in the Man United side now, how many of them would end up being as good as they are? Like, I don't think people realise that the development of a player is so much about what's around them. You know, if you put Mainoo into Man United's 99 squad, would he be a better player now, 2 years later? Of course he would. He'd be learning off Roy Keane and Paul Scholes and Nicky Butt and David Beckham and all those players. And people don't appreciate this. They just, and more importantly, owners of football clubs and directors of football don't realise this. They think if you've got a talent, they will be a talent no matter what they do. No. Talent, it's like growing a flower in the rain and the frost, or growing a flower in the sun and the rain. You know, you need the rain to water the flower, but you need the sun to help it grow, and you need to protect it. At United, we just throw it into any condition and go, well, it will surely be good. And this is the mistake that Chelsea have made, and this is the mistake that United seem to want to make. We want to buy all this young talent, but we don't want to provide the platform for it to grow. And then the club won't grow. So we've got to bring some experience into this team. Melchett says, Mamadou Sangare is one of Lens' best players, making them compete with PSG for the title. He's a belaboured type, but better. Can't imagine we won't try for him, says Melchett. I would imagine, Melchett, that he will end up at somewhere like Brighton or Newcastle or Leicester aren't in the Premier League anymore. Bournemouth, because they will go and get that player, flip him into a 60 million, 70 million, 80 million pound player, and then sell him to Man United or Chelsea. But you're right, we should be going for a player like that. Mark, in my opinion, James Garner should be in our top three midfielders. Athletic, can shoot, pass, almost a mini Valverde, Premier League proven. What do you think? I do like James Garner. I just think James Garner, João Gomes, Scott at Bournemouth, Tyler Adams, all those names should be in option three for Manchester United as a third midfielder, not as option two or one. Mainly would actually be better next to a João Gomes, says Emily Derry. Yes, he would. You're absolutely right. Bit of experience, bit more of a holder. You're absolutely spot on. Absolutely spot on. Ineos have a history of sacking managers with Nice. I don't think we're going to be buying players to secure any manager's future, to be honest. If so, we would have gotten a centre midfielder, but Amrim. I think this is a great observation by Patrick as well. Ineos do sack lots of managers and blame them for their mistakes. But what I'm saying is, whether it's Michael Carrick or it's Nagelsmann as manager next season, how stable is their future if the transfer window is based on inexperience and prospects? One thing doesn't exist at Manchester United anymore is patience. I had this conversation with somebody a couple of months ago, and they were saying that, look, if we get some good young players in, I think we can be patient and build. And I went, I'm completely disagreeing. I do United stand twice a day, every day, and you know, I have my own opinion, but obviously I pick up and read a lot of your comments and I look at social media. There is no patience at Manchester United anymore, and it's got nothing to do with me or the media. It's just fans becoming tired. You know, I've seen it with Ugarte and Dorgu, where people are calling them shit after their first game. I've seen it with managers where people are manager, if they don't like the manager, the manager out after one game. There is no patience in this fan base. And if Sir Jim Ratcliffe wants to listen to anything from Man United fans, he should listen to that, because he keeps sitting there talking about, you know, projects and future. There is no patience in this fan base. And what are you going to do about that? You're only going to build patience by actually having a period of performance and good results.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And they all they ever want to do is sell patience, and there is no patience in this fan base. There isn't. Like, I think whoever the next manager is, if we lost two of our first five, you would already hear people going, this ain't the guy. People aren't scared anymore to put their opinion out there very quickly. People aren't scared about, like, when I started doing this 10 years ago, I didn't like Fellaini. And you know me, I've always been quite, well, I was new to this, but you didn't know me personally. But I would say if I think a player's shit. And, you know, I was on social media, Fellaini, you know, I only just started doing this. And I was like, Fellaini's shit. And people were like, you can't say that. he gives his all, and you'd get quite a lot of crap for it. Probably rightly so, you know. But nowadays, you know, you can say what you bloody well like, and a lot of people will agree with it. And that's nothing to do with the changing nature of social media, because trust me, when I used to go and watch like games in the early noughties at Old Trafford, you could hear the crowd jeering Ryan Giggs, you know, getting fed up with him because he was just giving the ball away. So football fans have always been, they've had their favourites, they've had the people, the players they don't like, they get impatient. But that's the word, it's the impatience. It's nothing to do with the changing way that people support football. I mean, obviously you've got Player FC and stuff, but I don't think there's football fans out there that just want to go, he's shit, he's shit, he's shit. I think it's just there's no... I think people see the mistakes earlier. And that's patience. Like, if you buy Belabor this summer, if you buy Belabor 10 years ago with Sir Alex, this is a great point. So imagine Belabor's exactly the same player. He's been crap this season, yeah? We've just won the league with Sir Alex. Pick your year. Right, let's say 2008. We've just won the league and the Champions League. And he buys Belabor from Brighton. I know, because I lived it, people would go, that's interesting. That's really interesting. I don't think he's been that good for Brighton. There's definitely potential, but I don't think he's been that good. But we've won the league. We've won the Champions League. Let's trust Sir Alex. Let's see, you know, maybe he's going to be a player in 2 or 3 years' time. And you have that patience because you have that trust in the club's doing well and it's done well for years and you trust the manager. So Belabor coming in 2008, you'd probably go, okay, that's fine, give him time. And maybe in the first 3 months he doesn't do that well, but you go, look, it's a project, let's see. You bring Belabor in this summer and he starts off badly, everyone's going to go, I fucking knew it. I knew he was shit. I told you he was shit. The red flags were there. Wilcox is a bloody idiot. Ineos are crap. Belabor's crap. And that's what I mean about patience. It's not about modern society or, you know, football fans being negative. It's literally about the way the club behaves. You earn patience. I think there was patience in the Moyes, Van Gaal and Mourinho era. There was a little bit of patience in the Solskjaer era, because they were all new. Moyes was the proven Premier League manager. Van Gaal was the proven experienced manager. Mourinho was one of the best managers in the world. And then Ollie was the ex-player. So I think all of them, for the first however many years, did get experience, did get patience in the fan base. But I think by the time we hit Ten Hag, the patience just disappeared. And that, you know, it's hard then if you're Ten Hag. It's hard if you're Amorim, and it'll be hard for the next guy. But the patience is not there in the fan base anymore. And you see it. Managers, new signings, people will make their mind up very quickly and go, I can see where this is going. I'm not being fucking patient. And are fans wrong to do that? You know, if we appoint the manager that you don't think is the right manager and we buy the players that you don't think are the right players and the results don't look like they're going to happen, are you going to sit there and go, well, let's give it a couple of years? Or are you going to go, I knew this was going to happen. They are idiots. And it is the owner's fault. You're absolutely right back. Dan says, do you think De Zerbi going to Spurs means it's Carrick and Nagelsmann for the manager's job? Is that why you were so happy to announce it, says Dan? You know what? I never, ever thought about De Zerbi going to Spurs, meaning that he couldn't come to Man United. And you're the first person, and that's stupid of me, but you're the first person to highlight that. Look, it's a name off the list, definitely, and I am happy about that. I don't think De Zerbi was a good fit for Manchester United. I think he might be a good fit for Spurs. But look, I just think that was more of a football excitement, that I think De Zerbi at Spurs makes that relegation battle a little bit more interesting now. But yeah, I am happy he's not going to be the Man United manager. Talking about the Man United manager, obviously there's a lot of PR going around at the moment in relation to Michael Carrick and him getting the job. I saw something in The Athletic this morning, which is basically about how Michael Carrick has changed Man United's football. More passing, fewer crosses, lower pressing. In fairness, it's quite a balanced piece, because basically it is, I think, overarchingly, I think it's quite a positive Carrick piece. They're trying to say that, you know, the results are better than Amorim. So the way that Carrick's got Man United playing is a positive. But I think if you are like me and you're a little bit more on the fence, more passes, fewer crosses, lower pressing, less intensity is not necessarily something that I think is going to be sustainable in the future. And the funny thing is, it talks about how we're passing the ball more our 10-pass pass sequences has gone up from 9.7 per 90 to 12.2 per 90 under Carrick. Our passes per sequence has gone up from 3.4 to 3.9 under Carrick. But ultimately, it depends what you want, because intensity and speed, look, I was having this chat yesterday on, with our coach on Baller League. We lost 5-3 on Monday. We had 60% possession, and we had more shots, more clear-cut chances. Maybe we should have won it, but I didn't feel like we should have won it. But the stats say we should have won it. We had more clear-cut chances and we had 60% possession. And I was saying I'd rather have had 40% possession, had the same amount of clear-cut chances, because they would have been more on the break. And I think, obviously, I'm talking about Baller League there, but with Carrick and Amrim, I liked the intensity of Amrim's play in the way that we pressed and we moved the ball. I still think it was counter-attack under Amrim, though. I still think we counter-attacked under Amrim. I'm not going to say that we didn't. But I think with Carrick, it's slower and it's less intense. So I don't think there is a hidden gem behind an article saying Carrick's got Man United playing well. I don't think he has. I think Michael Carrick has got United playing strategic, pragmatic, well-organised, and in a system where a lot of these players want to play 4-3-3. But I don't think there's a PR piece that the football's great. I refuse that. I refuse that. And also, we can talk about 10 pass sequences, but I did the video a couple of weeks ago. Our possession is low. It's been low all season. It was low under Amrim and it's low now. We're hovering around 50 to 52% possession in most games. We're nowhere near the 60%. We're nowhere near the 70%. We're not that type of team. So we're not a possession team. We've not been a possession team all season. I think in Carrick, we're defensively better set up. I think we play deeper, which is why Maguire's playing. I think we played deeper, more on the edge of our box, and we counter. I think under Amrim, we played higher and more intense, which probably led to us not being as good defensively. I don't think either system really works in the long term. What I'm trying to say is I don't think there's anything from what Carrick's doing that would make me go, this is amazing for next season. In fact, quite the contrary. I don't think Steve Holland's Southgate ball is going to work long term, which is why if Carrick gets the job, I think he needs to change the way he plays. And I don't know whether that will happen. But yeah, I don't think you can sell a story on Carrick's style of play because, well, I mentioned it at the start, Arsenal and Man City were fantastic. Since then, I just don't think it's been very good. And look, Arsenal and Man City were fantastic. I loved those games. They were brilliant. The intensity was there. Obviously, that's fell off since, because I don't think we're training in the same way, so I don't think we can be as intense as we were. The intensity's fallen off, the excitement therefore falls off. But in defence of Carrick, Manchester City played with a reserve back four and a high line at Old Trafford, and we love to counter. Arsenal at the Emirates have to attack us, and we love to counter. So we did play two teams in Arsenal and Man City that are perfect for a team that wants to sit deep and counter. And we did. And we could have scored 10 against Man City, but it was all counter. So we have a team that suits us. And that's a team that attacks. I mean, I'm surprised we didn't beat Bournemouth. I'm really surprised we didn't beat Bournemouth because they're perfect. They're absolutely perfect for the way we want to play, and so are Brighton. But yeah, I mean, look, my stance hasn't changed. I don't want Carrick to get the job. I'm very worried about his coach and his style. And I don't think it will be sustainable in the future. And I do think that every time we've played two games a week, we've struggled. You think about West Ham away, we played at the weekend. You think about Newcastle away, we played at the weekend. You look at Bournemouth away, although it was a Friday, we played on the Sunday. I think we really struggle when we play two games a week at the moment. So for me, it's a wholesale change in the summer. I think we need a different way of playing and we need a lot of new players bringing in. That's sort of my stance on it. Carrick only offers incremental improvement over a previous setup, which was too convoluted. When the novelty of this wears off, I fear it will unravel, says Stewart. I think that is a fair point as well. I do worry about the novelty value. The interim to permanent is night and day. The situation as an interim is different to that as a permanent. And we saw it with Ollie, and we've seen it with DiMatteo, and we've seen it with loads of other people. There's a different vibe to be an interim. And then when you get the permanent job, you've almost got to start upsetting people, and players become tired. You need that. Look, our manager position's a little bit like the midfield position. It might work with inexperience. I think we need experience. And with the manager, it might work with inexperience, but I think we need experience. How about best in class for the United stand? We need one tier one or at least two tier two journalists, not Ben Jacobs, as facts. Yeah, but mate, that's your personal opinion. And Ben Jacobs has been right on loads of things. And, you know, we're not going to change that. So thank you very much for your super chat. Do you think De Zerbi going to Spurs? I've done that one. And Goretzka as the third midfielder for Champions League experience is one inch wonder. Goretzka's over 30, mate. Do you really want to go and buy a Bayern Munich midfielder who's very good, who's over 30? I think we've done that before. You know, you can't say, let's not get Carrick because we did it with Ollie, and then say, let's get Goretzka, but forget what happened with Schweinsteiger. Emily Derry says, there's no patience in the fan base, but deep down there is no patience in Glineos and their minions for a project either. Patience is an excuse, says Emily. Thank you very much. We've done Patrick's as well. Okay. Ned's just had a lovely morning dump. And on that bombshell, I think we will stop the show. What day is it? Wednesday. I am back with you at 8 o'clock tonight because there is no international football. Thank God. That was a bloody joke last night. 8 o'clock show with you tonight. We've got 2 o'clock show this afternoon as well. If you didn't watch live, get your comments in as always. Have a great day. Stay safe. And I will speak to you
later.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.